Next speaker and final speaker for the afternoon is Natalie Kratz, excuse me. It's been a long day. And she is a statistical analyst in the Vaccine Prevention Disease Program at the New Jersey Department of Health. She earned her MPH from Boston University, woo-hoo, and was a CSD Applied Epidemiology Fellow until March of this year at the New Jersey Department of Health Communicable Disease Service. While a fellow, she worked on a wide range of disease topics, including meningitis, mumps, Lyme disease, influenza, enterovirus, D68, Ebola, haven't we all, at Legionella, on which she is presenting today. And her factoid, I guess, is that she has run the Boston Marathon 5 times.
See, I told you. Yeah, I know. Hopefully that's impressive enough, so if I don't do a good job speaking today, that's enough. Congratulations on making it this long into the day, and thank you for sticking around. Today I'll be talking about a study we did in New Jersey looking at the association between Legionellosis and weather variables. So first I'll give a little background on Legionellosis, both in general and in the state of New Jersey, and then I'll talk about our two-part study that we did broken down into a time series study and a case crossover. So Legionellosis is characterized by cough, shortness of breath, high fever, muscle aches, and headaches. It can manifest as either Legionnaire's disease or Pontiac fever. The major difference between the two is that when you have Legionnaire's disease, you develop pneumonia. Both of these are reportable, although often Pontiac fever goes undiagnosed because it's such a mild form. CDC estimates that 8,000 to 18,000 people are hospitalized annually because of Legionellosis. Infection occurs infection occurs through the inhalation of water droplets that have been contaminated by the bacteria Legionella. Legionella is a bacteria that grows best in warm water, so at temperatures between 68 degrees and 122 degrees Fahrenheit, this organism can multiply, and when it's between about 90 degrees and 105 degrees Fahrenheit, this is ideal for growth. Many people who are exposed to the bacteria don't actually become infected, though. It tends to target males, the elderly, smokers, those with chronic lung disease, and those who are immunocompromised. There's about a 2 to 14 day incubation period between exposure and disease for Legionnaire's disease, and in Pontiac fever, it's about 1 to 5 days. This disease is fatal 5 to 30% of the time for Legionnaire's disease, and rarely, if ever, fatal for Pontiac fever because that is so mild. There's a seasonality that occurs with this disease. In summer and early fall tend to be the peak season for this. About 80% of cases are sporadic. The rest are outbreak associated. So usually a source is not identified, especially for a sporadic case, but clusters have been associated with a lot of different kinds of environments. For example, hotels. So that top left picture is the Bellevue Stratford Hotel, which had the famous outbreak in 1976 and led to the discovery of the disease and the name Legionnaire's disease, because it was the Legionnaire's convention. It's also been associated with hospital or long-term care facilities, decorative fountains, hot tubs, cooling towers, but it's also found in the natural environment. It can be found in soil, in water, and even in puddles after rainy days. So, sorry about the slide, I don't know how that happened. It looks normal on my computer. We've been seeing a lot of increases in Legionellosis in the U.S. In the past decade or so. They increased 179% from 2002 to 2012, and the incidence rate increased 153%. We have a peak years in 2011, and we had over 4,000 cases nationally, and the rate increased to 1.36 cases per 100,000 person years. So in New Jersey, we're seeing kind of a similar trend with increases in the past 10 years or so. So this graph shows the number of Legionellosis cases by onset month and year in New Jersey from 2003 to 2013. So in 2013, we noticed that there was a spike early in the summer in New Jersey. We had about 61 cases occurring in the month of June. We also saw similar trends going on across the Northeast. And then looking back in past years, we saw another large spike in 2011 at the end of the summer in August and September. And I know on this graph, it doesn't look like it's a huge spike, but that's actually 2 months that were up around that level. We had 45 cases in August and another 42 in September. So we also noticed in 2013, I apologize again for the slide, I don't know what happened there, that it had been already a pretty wet, rainy summer. So this is the average daily precipitation for each month through that same 2003 to 2013 period throughout the state of New Jersey. So in June, we were seeing an average of 0.4 inches every, or I'm sorry, in August of 2011, we had an average of about 0.4 inches every day and about a quarter of an inch every day on average in June of 2013. So this just shows an overlay of those two graphs. So looking at the cases in orange and then the precipitation in blue, we can see that maybe there is some sort of a relationship between these two things. So there's a general understanding that Legionellosis is impacted somewhat by the environment and weather factors. It is waterborne and found in nature, and it's seasonal. And the seasonality might be because it grows best in that warm water. So when there's warm, rainy months, you're going to see more of the disease. So we conducted a literature review and ended up finding a lot of conflicting data. Some studies showed that there was a definite association between rain, humidity, heat, and onset, but others found no association with those same variables. So to investigate this relationship further in New Jersey, we conducted a two-part study. So first, we did a time series looking at the monthly weather data and case counts. So this would look at the longer-term exposure to weather and then just the monthly incidence of rates. So our results from that were just rate ratios with our monthly weather values. The second part was a case crossover looking at the daily weather leading up directly to the onset of disease. So we're looking at the risk of disease with the more immediate weather that was occurring. And those results are going to be presented in odds ratios for daily weather and Legionellosis. Just to preface, I primarily worked on the time series, and my co-investigator, Jessie, she worked primarily on the case crossover. So I apologize in advance if I stumble a little bit during that case crossover section. I'm not 100% as comfortable with that section. So we got our weather factors from the National Climatic Data Center. New Jersey was divided into five climate regions as described by the Office of the New Jersey State Climatologist. We had 22 weather stations that we got data from, and each station was geocoded to a climate region, and available daily values of meteorological factors from each station were then averaged within that climate region. Each case was then assigned to one of the five identified climate regions based on their residency, and then respectively assigned those meteorological values for their region. We looked at both daily values and the monthly average values depending on which study design. So the factors that we had to look at were temperature. We had our daily minimum, daily maximum, and daily average. We had dew point, precipitation, and visibility, sea level pressure, and just in case anybody's not familiar with this, because I wasn't at all, higher pressure days tend to be your nice, clear, sunny days. The low pressure days are the stormier days. So high is good weather, low is kind of bad weather. For wind speed, we had the average wind speed, the highest gust for the day, and then the sustained maximum. The sustained maximum is an average for just a period of time within the day, and that actually varied between station, what they defined for that time period. And then for relative humidity, we actually calculated this using the temperature and dew point for each day. We had a total of 22 weather stations, which are shown, it's kind of hard to see in those little black diamonds that are within the state. And each climate region had 2 to 7 weather stations associated with them. So for both studies, we included all cases from 2003 to 2013, and who spent at least some of that 2 to 14 day incubation period within New Jersey and had a New Jersey residence. So just to break it down, about 2/3 of them were male, which was to be expected as it does tend to target males. 78.5% were 50 years or older. 69% fell within June and October, so following that seasonality that is typical for Legionella. And then within our regional distribution, our central region had just over 50% of our cases, but about 50% of New Jersey's population actually resides in the central region, so that distribution does make a lot of sense. So first I'll talk about our time series study. So for this one, we used monthly averages of weather data for each of our five regions. We matched the cases to the weather based on their region of residency and their onset month and year. And we controlled for month, year, and region within those. And we used Poisson regressions to get our rate ratios. So for our modeling methods, we've created bivariate models and then multivariate models. We had some issues because there's obviously a lot of correlation between weather factors, for example, temperature and dew point and humidity, especially since we used the first two to calculate the last one. They all tend to be correlated with each other. So to deal with that, we made multiple full models so that we wouldn't include correlated values within the same model, because if you were to leave both of these variables in a model, it would reduce the significance of one or both of the exposures. And then, as you can see on the table, that's messed up, we had a couple of different variables that kind of measured the same thing. So as long as one of our variables, for example, temperature, made it into a model, we didn't then create another full model just so that we could have minimum temperature in a model. We just wanted to make sure it was accounted for somewhere. So that was how we limited our redundancy. And then we used backward elimination, and we retained anything with a p-value greater or less than 0.2. So these are our results. So these are our bivariate results. The second column for the unit is the unit for the rate ratio. So for example, the rate ratio for the temperatures are for every 10 degree increase Fahrenheit. So the circling that's going on there is to show that our temperature results turned out a little bit odd. It looks like our maximum is protective, our mean is borderline protective but not significant, and the minimum is not significant at all. And we think that a big part of this is because we did control for months. So any effects of temperature might have gotten skewed by controlling for a month. But these don't really line up the way they should. But what we saw on the other factors were that relative humidity and precipitation were and gust were positively associated with onset of disease, while maximum temperature and visibility were both significantly protective. We actually decided for our models to then leave wind speed in there instead of gust, even though that wasn't seen to be significant. But because we were looking at monthly data, we really felt that that was a more logical factor to think about. You know, instead of a couple of strong gusts that happened on a few days, we felt that the average wind speed throughout the entire month was a little bit more valid to look at. So these are our multivariate models and final models. So what we ended up seeing was that relative humidity and precipitation ended up being positively associated with onset of disease, and maximum temperature and visibility were protective. And as I mentioned before on the last table, we weren't really sure what was going on with temperature. It seems a little bit odd that your maximum temperature, as your temperature increases, you'd be less likely to have disease, because we know that this bacteria thrives in warm weather. So in order to kind of address this over control or over addressing for seasonality, we did a sub-analysis. So here we only looked at cases that occurred between April and October and no longer controlled for month. And so once we did that, we can see that our temperature results actually make a lot more sense, and they are correlated, or I'm sorry, they're associated with onset of disease. And the rest of our factors ended up being significant, or almost all of them. We had all of our temperature values, dew point and humidity and precipitation being positively associated with disease, while all of our wind speed factors and visibility ended up being protective. So for our models, I apologize again that this didn't look as pretty as it did on my slides. Our dew point, humidity, and precipitation all saw a positive association with disease, while wind speed and sea level pressure both ended up being protective. And again, sea level pressure, high pressure is better weather, so it would make sense that that would be protective. So now on to our case crossover. So the benefit of the case crossover is that each case is essentially matched to itself, so you don't really have to worry about confounding. So for here, we looked at the daily weather data to compare the conditions that were leading up to either the onset date or the control date that we selected. So each case had two control dates, and they were within 2 weeks of the onset, and they were on the same day of the week to account for any kind of pattern within onset, because a lot of our records might have been the day they actually sought treatment. So if there are any kind of variables as far as like holidays or weekends, that would be accounted for. We looked at the daily weather to compare these two, and then the results coming out of these were odds ratios. So similar to the time series, our cases were matched to the daily weather data for their respective region. And then what we did is we averaged that daily weather data into lag periods. So we called 1 to 5 days before onset or control was our likely during incubation, 6 to 10 days before onset was likely preceding incubation, and 11 to 15 days before was preceding incubation. So this is a visualization of the lag periods for those case or control days. So say the case or control day happened to be the 19th, that red period on the bottom was your likely during incubation lag. The blue one in the middle was the likely preceding incubation, and then the brown one that goes between those 2 weeks was the preceding incubation. Our modeling methods were very similar to the time series one with our bivariate and multivariate models, accounting for including only non-correlated data in our major models, and as a result having multiple full models, our attempts to limit redundancy and our backwards elimination, retaining anything with a p-value of less than 0.2. So unlike the time series, our bivariate results were intuitively what we had expected. We have temperature, dew point, humidity, and precipitation being positively associated, and wind speed, sea level pressure, and visibility being protective. Another interesting thing to note is that for our lag days, almost every single variable, the 6 to 10 days before that preceding incubation period, seemed to be the most significant, with the exception of maximum temperature and wind speed. For maximum temperature, we actually didn't include that in the model anyway because minimum temperature had a stronger association, so that was the one that we selected for the full model. And after a lot of discussion and debate, we decided to leave wind speed out of our final model. We couldn't really justify that wind speed 11 to 15 days before the onset of disease would have that much to do with the onset of disease. It just kind of seemed unlikely in our minds, so we left it out because of that. So these are our multivariate results, and what we ended up seeing is the only significantly positive association was that relative humidity, and both sea level pressure and visibility ended up being protective. So just to be complete, we did another sub-analysis on this one, looking only at the April to October dates only. So these results are almost the same as what we saw in the last bivariate one with all the months in it. And that was to be expected because since we were doing a case crossover, we didn't need to control for month, year, or region because it would have been the same or nearly the same. Maybe the month would have changed, but not significantly. So aside from mean temperature and maximum temperature, everything remains significant. And not surprisingly, the results for the multivariate models were almost the same exact thing that we saw with the full data set. So to wrap it all up, we saw that our multivariate models gave us kind of the same significant factors in both the time series and in the case crossover. Warm, wet, humid weather was associated with onset, and that makes a lot of sense because that is kind of the best environment for the Legionella bacteria to multiply and to also be able to remain in the air. And high pressure, visibility, and windy weather we saw was protective. And again, high pressure and visibility, that makes sense. And windy weather, we also had a lot of discussion around what exactly was going on with the wind. We had two kind of conflicting theories. One was that if you have Legionella living in the air and it ends up being very windy, it can be spread out and potentially expose more people. But at the same time, maybe when it is spread out by all of this wind, it actually disperses to enough to the point where your dose isn't high enough to actually cause as much disease. So there's a lot that can be investigated as far as wind goes. So we had a few limitations with our study. As you saw on the map earlier, our weather stations were unevenly distributed. For example, one of our regions only had two weather stations, and a lot of the residents of New Jersey ended up not actually living near any of the weather stations within their region. So some of the cases were just better classified for weather than others were able to be. We had a lot of problems with our highly correlated and redundant data. It's hard to build a model using factors that you really shouldn't be putting in a model together. We had to make the assumption that cases were exposed within their home region, and we made the decision to include any case that spent any time in New Jersey during their incubation period and assume that they were actually exposed there, even if they were only there for maybe one day of that 12-day period. Monthly data was not always the most appropriate data for specific cases. So, for example, if a person were to get sick on the first of the month, it seems very unlikely that the rest of the month's weather would have anything to do with the fact that they got sick a couple days ago. But you know, it was something that we weren't really able to work around. And as you saw in our two different types of analyses, it's really difficult to appropriately control for the seasonality. The disease is seasonal, so you do need to think about that, but it is seasonal because of the nature of the seasons. Because it's hotter and humider in the summer, you're obviously going to see more cases. So by controlling for months to control for season, we couldn't really see the true effect of those factors. So a couple of recommendations that we had were when doing outbreak investigations for Legionella, in addition to looking for, you know, that smoking gun, that cooling tower decorative fountain that tests positive, another thing to consider is to look at what the weather's been like in that area. Maybe it does have something to do with some abnormal weather going on. We need to see more studies in more regions and collaborations between states if we really want to understand this better. For example, New York State works on a really good weather and Legionella study that included a lot of other states in the area and out to the Midwest. And Philadelphia did a very similar study to what we did, and we actually used that for a lot of guidance. And just being able to expand this nationwide or internationally and get more weather data in different regions, we might better understand how Legionella is related to the weather. And another thing that needs to be investigated is the interaction between weather factors. You know, these factors don't exist in a bubble. They're highly correlated. And when you have a wet but cold day, it's probably a lot different than when you have a wet, warm day, especially as far as Legionella goes. And we didn't have the ability to really investigate that interaction. So I would just like to thank my co-investigator, Jesse. Dr. Fagliano, who gave us a lot of guidance along the way, and Dr. Montana and Dr. Tam, who are my mentors. And any questions?
The
way our system was, we weren't able to actually identify how many were really outbreak associated or how many were healthcare associated, just because the way the data comes, it doesn't come out that way. We were able to, if they were marked for a specific outbreak, which doesn't happen every time, we were able to see that, but it was really only a handful. Yes.
With your wind data, did you have wind directions? It would seem that this cooling tower might have an onshore versus an offshore wind that would blow a boom off of a tower in a different direction.
Right. No, we didn't have it. We just had the average speed.
Okay. So you mentioned whether or not they were in the state or they got sick. How did you determine that?
a lot of reading cases. we have within our system, you can pull out various risk factors, and one of the risk factors that can be selected for Legionellosis is travel. So anything that was earmarked as travel, I would actually go in and read the comments, and if I could find the dates of that travel, I would either include it or exclude it appropriately.
Did you issue any advice regarding
I'm not actually, no, we did not, based on the study, we haven't done anything like that. And I'm not really 100% familiar with what the people who do the facility investigations, if they have any kind of recommendations as far as that, but I can look into that for you if you want. Yes.
So how do you use this information to protect public health?
That's a good question. Like I said with my recommendations, just the general better understanding of how the weather might be impacting it would be a good way to just issue guidance, maybe for the more vulnerable populations. So for instance, maybe if you know it's been kind of bad and gross and wet and warm outside and you're working in a long-term care facility, maybe keep people inside for a little while if you know it's going to be a high risk, or if maybe there's a history of disease in that area. Definitely something to think about. Okay. Well, thank you.